This is PT Talker, presented by Advantage Medical. The aim of this podcast is to expose physical therapists to unique and innovative ideas to help grow their business. Each broadcast will introduce you to new concepts that will save you time, provide a better patient outcome, or lower your cost. And now, the host of PT Talker, Jeff Worrell.
You've joined us for another episode of PT Talker, and with us today is our weekly expert for the week, Mr. Keith Koo in private practice physical therapy. Keith, welcome to our show today.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Now, you are a physical therapist at a outpatient physical therapy clinic. Can you just tell us a little bit the name and where it is and all that kind of thing?
All right. Facility is called Oklahoma Neurological Center of Excellence, ONCE for short. We see primarily movement disorder patients, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, but I end up seeing patients for pain, end up seeing patients for neuropathies and all kinds of other orthopedic problems associated with those neurological dysfunctions.
Yeah, and you and I have met on several occasions. I've attended a couple of your conferences. We're actually out here in Seattle, Washington, where we're working with a group of therapists who are trying to learn more about how to use muscle stim effectively in the daily treatment of patients. And I must admit to you, when I watch you work with a muscle stim machine, you almost make it dance and sing. It really is quite a thing to watch. One of the things you recently did, and I don't want to get too far along, but you did a nerve block just using any average normal stim unit sitting in their clinic. So let's just start out a little bit with what your theories are and how you use muscle stim in your practice.
Well, muscle stim has a variety of different applications. So if you're doing straight muscle stim and you're re-educating the muscle, remember you can, like with my MS patients, you can actually increase muscle strength by overloading the muscle. And based upon research and what have you, overloading muscle gives you the means of strengthening the muscle. So without the patient having to do too much. So that works out terribly well with that scenario. Now, when you start to use the device for nerve block or for pain management, that's a different scenario in terms of treatment. So if you were dealing with nerve block, you're trying to block the pain without losing the function, so to speak, once you turn it on. So, for example, if you were doing a muscle spasm reduction using muscle stimulation, you can actually do a 10-10 ratio, 10 on, 10 off, and literally fatigue the muscle. However, when you get done with the treatment, there's not much you can do with the patient because you've essentially fatigued the patient. However, if you use nerve block, then the option would be to be able to block the pain, but at the same time, the muscle function still stays intact when the pain is gone. So as soon as you turn the device off, within a few seconds or a few minutes, depending on how long you've had nerve block on, you get the sensation back and subsequently function back. So that works very nicely to be able to control what you want to do with the patient.
So from a functional standpoint then, let's say I'm trying to exercise a patient through a painful range of motion. Are you then advocating that you could use the pain block in order to help me get more range?
Absolutely. So, for example, if you're dealing with a frozen shoulder, for example, if you're going to be able to stretch out that shoulder, it hurts like hell. So the intent here is to block the pain while you do a mobilization, if you would, without the discomfort associated with it. Now, within the limits there, you have to be absolutely careful that you're not going to destroy tissue because you can so easily do that by overdoing it and being overzealous, but at the same time getting the results that you want within that treatment.
Sure. Just like any tool in our clinic, certainly if we do it too much or too fast, we can cause damage. So, all right. So, and we really jumped right into it with those two examples, but what are kind of your well, let me ask you this. Do you believe that muscle stim in the typical physical therapy clinic is underutilized, or do you think it's being used appropriately right now, just generally speaking across America?
Generally speaking, probably very underutilized because most folks never use muscle stimulation per se for strengthening the muscles. Typically, we use the typical exercise regimen with weights or with tubing or equivalent of resistance to be able to go ahead and get that strengthening process.
And why do you think that is? Why would I immediately go to a piece of TheraBand instead of my, my Richmar unit?
It has to do with, again, ease of application and how fast you can get the outcome. But realize that when you do exercise in the general sense of the word, you tend to hit the slow twitch fibers first. And so once you start hitting the slow twitch fibers, you're not really dealing with function necessarily. So once you start using a unit like a Richmar equivalent for muscle stimulation, now you're strengthening initially the fast twitch fibers, which deal with function. So if you want function, fast twitch fibers, then you want to use a muscle stimulator to get that effect.
Okay, so could we advocate then generally that if we are only using tubing or my weight stack equipment, that we are ignoring a big part of the rehab for the patient and we should be using muscle stim for the fast twitch?
It's a combination of things. So if you're dealing with endurance type activities, then perhaps the regular activity or regular exercise regimen will work. But then if you're dealing with, you want function quickly, then you want to kick in those fast twitch fibers, then using the muscle stimulator would be the way to go. Now, in combination, you could do the same thing. So you could do the muscle stimulator as well as using the weights or the bands equivalent of that.
But if I only get a stim treatment for pain control at the end of my treatment, am I being cheated as a patient if I leave that clinic?
Yes and no. But
and let's say I'm an athlete.
If you're an athlete and let's say you come in with initially, or pick the pain, knee problems, mm-hmm. and you have pain with the knee, but at the same time you're not able to get past the range of motion because it hurts. So finding if there's no tissue possibility of tissue damage, then killing off the pain right away within 5-10 minutes of using the pain protocols, you're able to now move the joint and be able to start strengthening the muscles, start stretching and hold on, so on and so forth. Now, as far as being, are you being cheated by not getting any more than that? Perhaps if the strength is not there and they're unable to accomplish that task by themselves with the weights, then perhaps adding the muscle stimulation in and getting that muscle re-education in, that neuromuscular re-education, if you would be the way to go in addition to what you're already doing. And I think your outcomes will be so much better.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're all interested in, is improving those outcomes. But just as a summary here, the TheraBand or weight strength training is not going to catch the fast twitched fibers like the muscle stim will.
Right. That's about true for the most part. Again, eventually you'll get the fast twitch fibers, but it'll take a while before you actually kick those in. So it's the reverse of what we generally think when we use resistance training.
Okay, so we need to then clarify that, and this would make it happen quicker.
Well, not necessarily quicker, but you'd be more efficient in terms of gaining the function back.
Okay, all right. Okay, now let's give our listeners maybe some teases. We're right standing here in front of it just happens to be a Richmar unit, which we're thankful for the clinic for letting us kind of play around. But you were showing me some protocols. Let's tease our listeners with how about the pain block protocol? What would I set up a machine? How would I set up the machine in order to do a pain?
If you're doing a, let's do two pieces to the puzzle. If you're doing primarily for pain and you want pain gone within 5-10 minutes, and literature suggests maybe at 20 minutes for the fastest. For my practice, I pretty much have pain gone within 5-10 minutes for most of my patients. So the protocol would be using an interferential current. You can go anywhere from 2,500 pulses per second to 5,000 pulses per second as your carry frequency. But your main frequency needs to be at 100 pulses per second. You're going to treat initially for the first 15 to 30 minutes on 100 and then switching it back down to 2 pulses per second for the second half of the treatment. The first half of the treatment is going to give you a quick pain relief. And during that period of time, you're going to be able to get enough pain relief so that you can increase and do whatever you want with the patient, exercise, stretch, do whatever it takes. Second half of the treatment, you're going to give a longer-lasting pain relief, anywhere from 5 to 6 pain-free hours, which is very cool for the patient, and allowing them, again, to function pretty normally. So that would be that cycle of setup. As far as vectoring, you can do a fast vector at 90 degrees or anywhere in between. That would give you that whole scenario. But the main thing is getting your pulse rate or frequency to 100 pulses per second for the first 15 to 20 minutes, and the second half at 2 pulses per second for 15 to 20 minutes.
Okay. Now, I have two questions. Just to clarify this in my mind, I thought I saw you with a therapist, and you did a pain block, and you were touching her with a a needle and she couldn't feel, but it seemed like that was immediate. But I thought you just said it, 5 to 10 minutes. Is that different than what you're describing here?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. The second half of the application here would be to go what is a nerve block.
Oh, okay.
A nerve block here.
Nerve block,
right,
I got it. Okay.
Versus a sensory analgesia or motor analgesia.
Okay.
100 pulses per second being the sensory analgesia, the 2 pulses per second being the motor analgesia.
Okay.
The nerve block application, however, you could use anywhere again from 2,500 to 5,000 hertz or pulses per second as your carrier frequency. Realize now that this is something totally abnormal, I guess, in trend of thought, but your pulse rate or overall pulse rate as a result of the interference is zero. So you would actually set the pulse rate at zero on your unit. Now, if you don't unable to get to zero, which most units out there cannot get to zero, the Richmar unit does get to zero.
This one you were just showing
that's
us,
right.
Yeah. Okay,
and
is that why we're using this one?
That's
yeah.
correct.
Okay.
And so it allows you to get to that point. Now, what you're doing is essentially what is the Wedensky inhibition. So you're really cutting off the function of the nerve by depolarizing the nerve. And so at that point, the nerve cannot fire. If the nerve cannot fire, you're going to end up with a nerve block, basically. So here is the easy protocol. Setting up the nerve block, you want to put the electrodes around the area you're going to block. So example, if you're going to block the shoulder, do a crisscross format over the shoulder complex, and then go ahead and turn up the intensity. And here's the key. You need to keep turning up the intensity to the point where the patient adapts. And once they adapt, you're going to increase the intensity again. You're going to get to a point where they don't feel the sensation of pain any longer. How fast does that occur depends on the patient and depends on how fast they can tolerate the electrical stimulation.
It seemed like it was fairly quick.
It's
on,
very
on
quick.
That therapist should
it's
just
It's very
demo.
Quick. Yeah. You can. I've used that protocol for decreasing muscle spasm so we can actually do mobilizations. Much easier when the muscle is not in spasm. Mm-hmm. But we can actually do debridement of wounds, which are usually painful, without any pain.
Yeah.
So
That's
the amazing. Application is endless in terms of how you want to apply this technique.
Now, I've still got a ton of questions, but we are out of time. Is there any way I could talk you into, we'll end this one and have you, we'll do another one and we'll use it next week. Would you be interested in doing that?
Absolutely, no problem. Thank you very much for having me on.
Excellent. So, Mr. Keith Koo, you've been listening to our weekly expert this week. Keith Koo, he was a physical therapist who has expertise in using muscle stim, as you can see, for a lot of great, and a lot of great protocols. We're going to come back next week with some more protocols from Keith. This is Jeff Worrell reminding you that you can listen to previous episodes of PT Talker by going to iTunes or go to pttalker.com. So I hope that you find that our information is helpful and useful in helping you to treat patients better. Remember, PT Talker is the place to come for business news and ideas just for therapists. Remember to tell you all your friends. This is Jeff Worrell saying so long for now.
PT Talker is a presentation of Advantage Medical, bringing you business news and ideas for therapists. Join us each week for new concepts to help you grow your rehabilitation business. To listen to previous episodes, visit us on the web at pttalker.com or on iTunes.